Hi folks, Barry here. Before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with New York Times best-selling author Andrew Schaefer, let me tell you a bit about our Patreon page. It is a really, really cool place to be. If you want to support the podcast, you can continue doing that by listening to us and giving us a little rating and review on iTunes, as ever. Or you can go to patreon.com/worstfootforward and you can donate a couple of quid or as much money as you like, up to, I think, 50 quid a month if you like, but 2 quid a month. And you can get little rewards for doing so, be it a shout out on the show, the chance to suggest a topic for an episode, or even having us round to your house. If that's something that you're into. In fact, those of our Patreoners who have donated above $3 a month, this month they've got a special little bonus episode of Ben and I reading an extract from Hope Never Dies, an Obama-Biden mystery, a book by our guest this week, Andrew Schaefer, a buddy cop story of Barack Obama and Joe Biden solving a murder. So that's the sort of stuff you could be getting if you could donate a little bit of money to us to help us keep making the show, pay for things like our train tickets to Brighton, where we recorded an episode this week, our subscriptions to websites, the fees we might spend on producing a live show, and things like that. So go check out patreon.com/worstfootforward and see if anything there tickles your fancy, and then maybe you'll tickle ours in return. Now enjoy this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with Andrew Schaefer.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and I have to tell you, my friends, I have had quite the day getting here. I woke up this morning in bed and turned over to find Patrick Bateman slowly snoozing away to himself, covered in the blood of numerous homeless people. I quickly leapt into my clothes, out the door and straight onto the Rainbow Road, where I raced against Mario, Luigi and Bowser. However, just before I could finish the race, the whole thing was interrupted by Donkey Kong and King Kong having a ding-dong karaoke sing-song. The battle went on for hours until eventually King Kong landed a killing blow by performing the entirety of Hamilton in costume. He celebrated by handing me the Ring of Power, the Elder Wand, 25 Infinity Stones and the Spear of Jesus. I quickly rushed off to the East End of London to try and sell them to Delboy and Rodney for £50 and a packet of jellied whelks, but was pickpocketed on the way by the Artful Dodger. I chased him all the way to Alderaan, where he was hiding in a sand person's hideout with his father, a centaur who was half horse, half LeBron James. Having finished that adventure, I quickly returned to Oz, rescued Princess Peach, and was crowned homecoming queen, and all before Ferris Bueller's parents managed to get home. And with me is the illegal rewrite to my classical work of literature. It's Barry McStay.
It's like this week's podcast has been co-hosted by Ready Player One on a really bad day.
Yeah, Ready Player One that's just full of horrible viruses.
You sound like you had a rough day, mate.
To pull away the fantasy for a moment, I've got, I think, what can be described as new father's flu.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the fact that we are crammed up close to each other around a microphone.
Yeah, sorry, pal.
It's going to turn into a petri dish that I have to keep in my house for the rest of the day.
A princess petri dish.
We're so excited about this week's episode.
Yeah.
Let me introduce our guest and you'll soon find out why. Our guest this week is a New York Times best-selling author and screenwriter whose books include the parody 50 Shades of Earl Grey, the humorous survival guide How to Survive a Sharknado and Other Unnatural Disasters, and the collection It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Fuck This, surely the motto of the times we live in. Having attended the Iowa Writers' Workshop and studied comedy writing at Chicago's famed Second City, he also teaches and mentors writers at Lexington's Carnegie Center for Literacy and Learning. His new book, the instant US bestseller Hope Never Dies, an Obama-Biden mystery, friend of the show, charts the former president and vice president in a post-White House caper solving the murder of an Amtrak rail conductor, and is without doubt a depiction of the president we truly deserve right now. It is the excellent Andrew Schaefer.
Hello, that was a wonderful intro.
largely pickpocketed from your own Wikipedia page, it has to be admitted.
I know. That's why I put it up there.
I tell you what, for listeners who haven't heard our episode about the world's worst detective, go back and listen to it. You'll discover then, that was when we first discovered your book, Hope Never Dies, when we were talking about terrible detectives. Although, having now read a chapter from it for our Patreon fans, both of us now have it on our Christmas lists.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. It's going to be a great Christmas book this year.
There's a sequel coming, is that right?
Not this year. No, there's going to be a sequel out next summer. I'm writing it right now, actually.
Oh, how exciting.
So if I sound distracted at all, you hear me typing, you know, as we're just ignore that. That's just me working on it.
That's the useful thing about doing this via Skype. You can be doing whatever you like in the background. Andrew did confess to us he was not fully clothed before the episode started.
That's cool. I'm quietly writing some Brexit fan fiction as we write.
When you finish the Obama-Biden series, will you follow it up with a Trump-Pence version? Like, can they be the Nancy Drew to Obama-Biden's Hardy Boys?
No. You know what? I wrote one whole book on Donald Trump, which is called Day of the Donald, Trump Trumps America. And that came out before he was actually the Republican primary winner. And I tell you what, that one book on him was enough for me. And I feel like I that was my own sort of political fan fiction. And I was watching it come true before my very eyes. So I said, you know what, I'm not going to write anything like this again. I'm going to use my powers for good from now on.
Did you feel a bit like Emma Thompson's character in that film Stranger with Fiction with Will Ferrell?
Yeah, only it was just Yeah, nobody wanted to read the book. You know, none of my friends on the left wanted to read the book because they're like, what if this comes true?
Yeah.
I don't want to jinx it. And then, you know, nobody on, you know, on conservatives wanted to read the book because there weren't any pictures in it.
Well, there we all now know who to blame, at least, for everything happening. We always ask our guests what they are worst at in the world. What would you say that is for you?
I was going to get around to answering this question, but, you know, the thing I'm worst at is probably procrastination.
It's a classic.
Yeah, spoken like a true writer.
I was like, how many other people have said that on this show? And I'm like, it doesn't matter because every writer probably, that's the first thought that comes to mind is like, oh, procrastination. I'll just put that off. And so, yeah, I was racking my brain for something and I was like, it's right there in front of you.
Yeah.
It's right there.
It's true. Are you good with deadlines as a writer, obviously, with publishing houses and agents?
Oh, you know, I never miss a deadline. I never miss a deadline. That's the great thing is that money is the great motivator. You know, when I didn't have contracts, it took me years to finish a book. And, you know, now I, you know, crap one out in 30 days, you know.
That's no way to speak about the former president and vice president. I'm very much the same. I'm quite good at. I now make myself set arbitrary deadlines with my agent. Do you ever do this, Ben? With like, now I have as of a couple of years ago, I have a writing agent, and it means I can go, oh, I'll have this to you by the middle of October. Having set myself some arbitrary date, I now know it's like handing in homework to a teacher. I now have to do it.
Yeah, I don't have that arbitrary teacher, and so in effect I am that arbitrary teacher, and I spend more time coming up with incredibly labyrinthine excuses to myself as to why I haven't done the writing.
You ate your own homework.
I did eat my own. Yeah, I have got an entire dog pound full of really, really hungry canines.
Do you think they were the history's first version of the shredder? Just as dogs. The office shredder when you wanted documents destroyed.
What's like when Rome was burning and Nero was like, I've got a lot of stuff to sort of like hide from the authorities.
Bring in the Doberman Pinschers. Yeah.
Doberman Pinschers are a lovely couple. My parents have them around for Seder every year.
Hi there. Did you know that nice used to mean stupid? Or that heckling used to be an important trade in Scottish port cities? Or that the connection between a fallen tree and important pieces of narrative exposition in Star Trek can be found on the open ocean way back in the Age of Sail? If you like language and learning nerdy bits of trivia behind everyday words, come along and join us at Lexitecture, a podcast about word origins and histories. Find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching Lexitecture, LexitecTure, on our website, lexitecture.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts.
Shall we get down to this?
Yeah, let's do it.
What's this week's subject?
So this week's subject...
He says, pretending he hasn't done research on it.
This week's subject is the world's worst fan fiction. We will no doubt go into what fan fiction is and how it operates and all the various flavours of it. I've barely read any fan fiction before this week.
No.
So had you?
No, actually. I haven't even, like... thumbed through Fifty Shades of Grey, or which saying it already sounds rude.
Come
so
on
sorry.
Now, no, there's only one Vivi. Use you finger Fifty for Shades of Grey.
No, I don't. I don't think I really had. Hang on, I remember. As a teenager, I did read some celebrity slash fiction online, which does fall into the category.
Which celebrity?
They tended to be members of the tennis tour. I quite fancied Andy Roddick.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So it's like Andy Roddick and Leighton Hewitt and things like that.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting better class of masturbation material.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a picture of Andy Roddick in my head, and it mostly involves capacious nostrils. Yeah. So, I guess I'm not going to finish that thought.
Oh, no, really? I'm sure we'll get into all the different types of fanfiction anyway. I'm going first, aren't I?
Yes, you are. Off you go.
Lovely. Well, first of all, I looked up whether you spell it... we're already going to annoy some people with what we've written down as the title of the episode. There is disagreement as to whether you spell it as fan fiction or fan fiction. All as one word or with the space in between them. I found a very angry article by a guy called Flourish Clink, which is an excellent name, who's the host of a podcast called Fansplaining, where he says he basically attacked Merriam-Webster's Twitter feed for spelling it fan fiction with the space in between it. And he says, no, it should be fan fiction, all one word. Statistically, a large majority of online users spell it without the space, but the reason, or even shorten it to fanfic, but dictionaries cite... published works, so books and things, which are more likely to have the space in it, which in turn are more likely to use the dictionary to figure out how to spell something. So they've got this like ongoing cycle where they spell it with the space and rather than all one word.
It sort of feels like the entire culture around fan fiction, it's like someone has taken the comments below the line on the internet and weaponized them in art form.
It's very, very true. Actually, we should say people know what fan fiction is. Andrew, you're an expert in it. Would you like to give people a brief sort of idea of what it is?
I mean, if this is their first introduction to fan fiction, you know, it's just taking... generally, you know, copyrighted or trademarked characters or characters that are out there in the world that other authors have written about and using them, you know, in your own fiction. So, you know, the classic fan fiction that everybody, you know, sort of jokes about is slash fic, where you have two characters, you know, making out or having sex, you know. Captain Kirk and Spock.
Yes.
You know, so you write about it, and there's it just has an association though with sex though.
Yeah.
I would say at least, you know, 75% of fan fiction out there has some sexual element to it.
Yeah.
Because it's you're trying to write stories that haven't been written by those creators.
Exactly.
And, and really, you're like, I want to see those two people doing it. Or Andy Roddick in that
and Leighton Hewitt. Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, it's people's sexual fantasies turned into narrative. And don't get me wrong, I've got an extraordinarily overactive sexual imagination, but I prefer to enjoy
it. It's a good job this podcast is just an audio medium.
Yeah, well, no, it's a good job this isn't like a 90s virtual reality film where the listeners can plug into my head and see the pictures in there. But the thing with sexual fantasies is I find they are much better in short film mode rather than released as novellas onto the internet.
Yeah, true. slash Victim's really interesting because it gets its name from the slash that you usually put between the characters involved, the name of them. So you might have Captain Kirk slash Dr. Spock, and that's famously one of the more one of the earlier most famous slash fictions is a book called The Ring of Shoshern by Jennifer Guttridge, which was written in 1968. It's 105 pages long. Spock and
that's
Kirk...
pretty short for fanfic.
Very, very restrained, actually.
That is one thing that fanfiction is definitely missing is an editor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you imagine going on Tinder and seeing someone's job description as fanfiction editor? it's an immediate no, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you'd put that on your LinkedIn. They're both trapped on the... Spock and Kirk are trapped on a planet together, and Spock enters a state called Ponfar, which is basically like a Vulcan heat. He's on heat. And he has to have sex or he'll die.
Great.
We've all been there, guys.
Yeah. Yep.
And so in an extraordinary act of humanity, Captain Kirk allows Spock to penetrate him. And they fall in love. And according to the book, they spend all of their remaining days on the planet exploiting both the planet and each other's bodies.
I'm intrigued because in yet another way, Star Trek is breaking down boundaries because, of course, it had the first interracial kiss, and it had nationalities from all over the world on Star Trek Enterprise, and now it has one of the first homosexual relationships in modern fiction.
Yeah, I mean, fan fiction and modern fan fiction really seems to have taken off around Star Trek. Like there were Star Trek fanzines and things being produced very early on. In fact, there's a term in fan fiction called Mary Sue. Did you come across this term? This idealized character. Star Trek, it's often like a minor crew member who will save the day and help Captain Kirk out and will be rewarded with some sort of sexual favor. They've got very little depth to them, and they're often a sort of an idealized version of the author.
There's also a male version called a Gary Stew.
Yeah, it wasn't Wesley Crusher accused of basically being that.
So they're just it's so interesting, though, that, you know, that it really popped up around these, you know, Star Trek and, you know, Harry Potter has hundreds of thousands of fan fictions out there. But around these big characters that, you know, that other people will write about, you know, for Star Trek, you think, you know, people that wrote about that, you know, they're on the show. It wasn't Gene Roddenberry writing, you know, every episode or whatever. You know, Star Trek The Next Generation, to some degree, is itself, you know, fan fiction.
Of course, yeah, it's the people who grew up watching the series.
So it's so hard to tell, you know, where the line between, you know, authorized fiction or whatever you want to call it is, you know. I mean, every Marvel movie out there, you know, no matter how much you try to call it is, you know, canon or something. Yeah. Is itself a form of fan fiction, I think.
Yeah.
You know, just without the sex, obviously. I think that the fan fiction community that's online right now specifically is really heavy with the sexual element and everything. But everybody has written, I think, fan fiction as a kid. If you played with action figures as a kid or dolls, you know, you created your own fan fiction.
Yeah, that's very true.
So you just didn't then put it online.
You know, offer it up to the world.
Offer to the world.
Yeah, no, that's true. I remember one of the first time I sat down and write something funny as a kid at school and was like, oh, I enjoy this. I think I might be good at this. It was I was taking the piss out of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And it was like an Indiana Jones story, but instead of him being victorious, the entire temple is booby-trapped and he ends up in the pot being eaten by some cannibalistic cult.
Dark. I mean, that should be the plot of Indiana 5 and they kill off the whole franchise completely.
Yeah, no, it's just 5 minutes and it's Shia LaBeouf is turned into ragu.
Yeah. Which would be very meaty, actually.
Yeah, yes, it would! That's nominative determinism at its best.
You mentioned Harry Potter there. According to an article that I read from 2016, fanfiction.net has 40,000 Star Wars fan fiction stories and 743,000 Harry Potters, which is a lot. Lucasfilm actually has a long track record with fan fiction. In 1981, as early as 1981, that's after only two of the films had come out, they were contacting fanzines to remind them that they owned all the proprietary rights of any characters in the world of Star Wars and they were not to publish Star Wars pornography.
I mean, that is a sexy red rag to a horny bull, isn't
Imagine
it?
Imagine Chewbacca's sex noises. You do a good Chewbacca, don't you, Ben?
I do a solid Chewbacca. I'm not doing
Come
a
on,
Chewbacca
Do
sex
Chewbacca
noise.
Orgasming, Ben.
Chewy.
Chewy. Chewy. Chewy.
Oh, yes.
That is excellent, Wookie Nookie.
Wookie Nookie.
Very impressed. I also read about another subsection called Fix Fic, mm-hmm. which is basically where the writer repairs a plot line that they don't really like. So a really classic example of this is Nahum Tate's version of King Lear. So Tate was the poet laureate in Britain in the 1700s, and he wrote a version of King Lear which had a happy ending. Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I read about some early fan fiction, mm-hmm. classic fan fiction. Samuel Richardson wrote a book called Clarissa, very classic, one of the early novels. An upper class lady called Lady Bradshaig didn't like it, so she wrote an improved ending to it. This is in the 1700s. Daniel Defoe, when he wrote Robinson Crusoe, just spawned like hundreds of sequels and spin-offs of people. It was such a big hit, really popular hit, that people started writing. And Richardson also wrote a book called Pamela. Pamela is a really troublesome book because it's an epistolary novel about like a serving maid whose master keeps trying to rape her.
Oh God! Isn't an epistolary novel is letters
in
back
letter
and forth.
Form? Yeah. So the whole way through, he's trying to rape her, and she says no and no and no. And then at the end, the subtitle of the book is Virtue Rewarded. The fact that she's resistant the whole way through means he eventually makes a chaste offer of marriage, and she accepts. And that is apparently the happy ending of the book.
Good Lord! And the foreword to that book was written by Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, there was a spin-off to the book called Pamela. Called Shamala, written by Henry Fielding, who's quite a well-known writer.
Yeah.
Jane Austen, a lot of fan fiction written about her even now, but as early as 1913, there was a book published called Old Friends and New Fancies, written by Sybil Brinton. She was a member of a group called the Janeites, who were like a group of Austen fans, and it's an imaginary sequel to the novels of Jane Austen, where she basically throws in characters from all of the books and puts them into new like love triangles and partnerships and things like that. Apparently there are now over 200,000 Jane Austen fan fiction works online. I just want to talk to you about a couple of really terrible online ones. You can find a lot of these on fanfiction.net. I really liked Hogwarts School of Prayers and Miracles.
That's Christian Harry Potter, isn't it?
Oh, yes, bloody right it is. It's by a person whose handle is Proud Housewife. Her intro says, "Do you want your little ones to read books? And they want to read the Harry Potter books, but you do not want them to turn into witches. Well, this is the story for you. This book has all the adventure of J.K. Orr's books, but will not lead your children astray for concerned mommies everywhere."
I'm out.
The first chapter has Aunt Petunia citing Richard Dawkins.
Oh no, I'm on the side of the Dursleys now, because they're rationalists.
Hagrid shows up as a door-to-door evangelist. And, of course, the classic line is, "You're a Christian now, Harry." And how do you get to Hogwarts? Not in the Hogwarts Express. You get down on your knees and say, "Dear Lord, take us to Hogwarts."
Oh my good. I'm so hard right now.
I really want to read a Jewish Harry Potter called Harry Schmutter, where Hagrid turns up on his doorstep, obviously dressed like a really shambolic rabbi, and goes, "You're kosher now, Harry."
There's a book called The Eyes of Argon. So it was published in 1970. It was published in a magazine, I think. It was written by a guy called Jim Theus, who was only 16 at the time. And it's now known as one of sci-fi's most beloved pieces of appalling prose. In fact, there's a game played at sci-fi conventions where they try and read out chapters of the book with a straight face without laughing at it. The critic, David Langford, who's a sci-fi critic, says that Theus is a malaprop genius, a McGonagall of prose with an eerie gift for choosing the wrong word and then misapplying it. Which is a hell of a review. My choice is going to come from the world of Sherlock Holmes.
Great.
There's actually a book that I'm really keen to read now called I Believe in Sherlock Holmes, and it's a collection of 14 Holmes spin-off works from the 1890s and 1900s. When Conan Doyle killed off Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. there was obviously a big outcry. A lot of people really unhappy about it. They wore black armbands and marched in the streets calling for him to bring him back to life. And obviously, because they're written as like Watson writing about cases he solved with Holmes, it was a very easy in for fans of the book to go, oh, well, I've found this new case that Watson wrote up and write their own fan fiction, their own versions of it. This book includes Mark Twain's A Double-Barreled Detective Story, in which a detective called Fetlock Jones stars, who is Holmes's nephew. But I'm actually going to pick... Punch magazine in 1893 published a series of stories and pastiches under the title The Adventures of Picklock Holes, which included included a story by a Liberal Member of Parliament in Britain. But my choice is a story by J.M. Barrie, the guy who wrote Peter Pan.
All right.
In 1893. So he'd worked with Arthur Conan Doyle on a play, and it hadn't gone well at all, really unsuccessful. And he wrote a parody Holmes story, which Doyle liked so much, he included it in his own autobiography. So the story is called The Adventure of Two Collaborators, and Holmes and Watson are at home in Baker Street. Watson trying to write, and Holmes, quote, amusing himself with a little revolver practice. It was his custom of summer evening to fire round my head until he made a photograph of me in the opposite wall. The sort of roommate you want, isn't it? And Holmes spots two literary characters, is what the book calls them, recognises that that big fellow who's taken credit for Holmes' own achievements. So J.M. Barrie has written a story starring Holmes and Watson, where J.M. Barrie and Arthur Conan Doyle show up at Baker Street. I mean, the plot isn't great, Ben.
Okay.
They walk in, they demand Holmes figure out, or deduce, why the public hasn't gone to this shit play that they tried to make together. And Holmes says, they prefer to stay away. Then, this is J.M. Barrie writing, by the way. He has Arthur Conan Doyle try to force Holmes to attend the play. And when Holmes says no, he kills him.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. Holmes's last words are, fool, fool, I've kept you in luxury for years. By my help, you have ridden extensively in cabs where no author was ever seen before. Henceforth, you will ride in buses.
Well, I don't know. The most recent Eminem album, it's called Kamikaze, and it is all about how nobody liked his last album. Every song on it is, what about these critics? Nobody likes it. A fan came up to me the other day. He said it was crap, you know? And I'm like, this is actually the best album that he's written in years.
Yeah. Andrew, what did you find?
I didn't go very far because I'm a procrastinator. As we've already covered. So I just went with 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes. I didn't know it was a fan fiction.
And that's why I think that it is the worst.
Because it's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
because it's so unrecognizable. Even the original, which was called Master of the Universe, starring
He-Man.
Edward Cullen and Anastasia or Bella, whatever. Edward and Bella. Even that one is just unrecognizable as fan fiction. Yeah. You go, oh, it has the same names, but these characters don't seem remotely like the Twilight characters. You know, it's a form of fan fiction called AU, Alternate Universe fan fiction. And there are tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of these, specifically about Twilight, featuring Edward as an office manager or a billionaire, which is just one of hundreds of these. This wasn't even the first, Edward as office manager that they had out there. So it wasn't even original in how it ripped off Twilight.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest sort of accusations thrown at fan fiction, isn't it? That the characters aren't behaving like the characters would behave.
Right. And I think in that sense that you're able to actually then pick up, she just changed the names, what they call polling to publish, or filing the serial numbers off. So when you change the name, you file the serial numbers off and then you sell it as, you know, oh, this is, their name is Christian and Anna. It's not anything to do with Twilight. And nobody that read, you know, 50 Shades of Grey picked it up and goes, oh, this is Twilight. Nobody knew that. And and I think that's, you know, one of the reasons, obviously, that, you know, Stephanie Meyer didn't say anything. She's just like, whatever, you know, I don't really care about this. Because you can't go before a judge, and the first thing a judge will say is, oh, this one has vampires, and this one doesn't. And
yes.
You go, okay, I guess it's not ripped off from you, is it? You know,
yeah.
Because you would have to go into, oh, well, the characters are ripped off. Oh, well, tell me how. Did they say the same things? No. Well, this one, she's kind of a weak character, and he's kind of a dominant, and it would just be thrown out of court. It's so ridiculous. So in that way, I think that, E.L. James actually created something that was completely original with 50 Shades of Grey. Even though she didn't mean to, it was accidental. So that's the great thing about, I think, fan fiction is that almost all of it is transformative, to some degree that I would say, falls within, legal boundaries for the most part, because it's just unrecognizable. So it's so fun. To see how it evolves, but yeah, it's called filing the serial numbers.
Such a great term.
And after 50 Shades of Grey blew up, the editors in New York went around trying to sort of goldmine through these through the fan fiction community, looking for the next 50 Shades of Grey.
I know, it was bonkers. They were offering like seven figure sums to some people.
Seven figure sums. And it was just left and right. They were just picking this one up, picking that one up. I had several friends that had written fictions that were out there, and they were very torn between, I have this ethical belief, I came up in the fan fiction community, they'd say, and I have this ethical belief that you don't make money off fan fiction. You don't rip off someone else's characters. On the other hand, years, And some of these writers right now have gone on to write many, many, many original books, beyond the first book. So, more power to them. But I it wasn't easy for a lot of them. They're just like, wow, E.L. James is sort of the first one to sort of break that strike line, And they're like, you crossed over, and we would never think of it, but God, the seven figures though—that's
that's a hell of an incentive.
Yeah, she should have just been more honest and called it a cover version. Because if you're working in music, you can get away with that.
Oh right. Yeah. You can get away with that. And that's the thing. There really is no monetary, publishing, music publishing. There's a way to do, the money goes to the original, writer of the song. Well, with fan fiction or with written, there's no way to allocate that money, or there traditionally has not been a way. And so you go, well, it's either. So there's no such thing as a cover version in literature, although that's a good point. I think there should be, and there should be a way to get this stuff out there. We were joking earlier about how long some of these go. There's some that, 500, 600,000 words.
Yeah.
and which if you're not a writer, you might go, I don't know how many that is. But, we're talking about, thousands of pages worth of material.
Yeah.
If you're writing something that is 500,000 or 600,000 words long, to me that's basically a terrorist's manifesto, and you need to end up on a CIA watch list if you're writing fan fiction that long.
There's just one that they just published that was originally on Wattpad by an author named Anna Todd. And she wrote, 600,000 words or something of One Direction fanfic. And so,
there's a lot of that online, by the way.
Yeah, it got picked up by a publisher, I believe Simon & Schuster, who has picked up a lot of the fanfic is picked up by Simon & Schuster. And yeah, they published it, but they had to do it with six books, a six book series of serial number filed off One Direction fan. I don't know what the name of the band is in the book or whatever, but I'm like, six books worth?
Two directions. It's very thinly veiled. Yeah.
Surely one dimension.
Yeah. Oh.
One erection.
Yeah. But it is, they're sort of like, when stuff like that happens, it's the equivalent, it's the literary equivalent of straight to DVD movies.
It is. You're like, who's picking some of these books up other than, you know, the fans that have already, you know, read this, you know. But yeah, it's amazing that this goes on still to this day. It's still, people are still, you know, editors are still mining the fan fiction communities, including Wattpad and fanfiction.net and it's still going on. But that gold rush really started with 50 Shades of Grey. But yeah, the most amazing thing was, you know, then at some point people started to write, you know, books. There was one called 50 Ways to Play BDSM, 50 Shades of Pleasure, A Bedside Companion. So these sort of knockoff books of 50 Shades of Grey. And E.L. James' agent then sent, you know, takedown letters to these companies.
Are you serious?
Yes, including my favorite line was, "You can't just hijack something someone else owns."
That is so good.
So the snake, you know, just eats its own tail at that. And it's so crazy. I actually had someone come up to me at a writing convention and berate me for writing my parody 50 Shades of Earl Grey, which is a parody of 50 Shades of Grey, where I put, actually at the end, I put the vampires back into the story.
So, sort of like antique restoration, that, isn't it?
Right, yeah. So I put those back in, and then I actually had someone come up to me at a convention and say, "How dare you? It is so wrong to piggyback off of someone else's success.
Wow.
You should be so ashamed."
That is amazing. Have you heard of Poe's Law?
Go on. This is in Edgar Allan.
No, this is as in Nathan Poe, a poster on ChristianForums.com in 2005.
All right.
So there was some back and forth that he was having about creationism with some dude, and Poe posted a comment. Someone said, "Oh, I wouldn't. Good job you posted the winky face, otherwise I wouldn't have known you were being sarcastic." And Poe posted what is now known as Poe's Law. "Without a winking smiley or other blatant display of humour, it is utterly impossible to parody a creationist in such a way that someone won't mistake it for the genuine article." And it's that thing of people online, particularly, and in published work, it's sometimes people find it really hard to recognise satire and parody.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the problem of onion and clickhole.
Yeah, all those things that post. Yeah, if they've retweet or the parody Donald Trump accounts and things that people. Yeah, I can't believe he just said this without realizing there's a blue tick missing.
Yeah, I sort of feel like the sheer volume of fan fiction. There was a statistic I found that over a third of all of the literary content on the internet is fan fiction of some kind, and I sort of feel like. You know, the physics idea of other worlds theory, that if you just take one slightly different decision, you will end up, you create a whole new universe. Well, these writers of fan fiction have decided to take that to its logical conclusion and write every other conceivable universe in the literary canon.
I think we're just synthesizing the monkeys and typewriters experiment.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's you know, that's what the 50 Shades of Grey was. It was, if you had, there were over 600,000 Twilight fanfics out there, and you had to think one of those monkeys writing was going to, you know, going to hit. Strike gold and come up on something that was just original enough to get published, and you're like, wow, she did it. You know, it was bound to happen, you could say. So
you're right. She did it is the thing. I sort of feel like we need an image of a Simon and Schuster editor in front of a giant Statue of Liberty sized picture of Robert Pattinson screaming, "She did it! She actually did it!" Gentlemen, we've not talked about sex nearly enough, so I am here to sully the airwaves. I mean, we could spend hours upon hours upon hours talking about the various horrific sex scenes that are in fan fiction, but here's some edited highlights. First of all, there is a fan fiction in which Lord Voldemort fucks Pikachu.
What is that thing that says, if you can imagine it, it's on the internet?
Rule 34.
Rule 34. Hang on, where do you fuck Pikachu? Also, isn't he electric?
Oh, that's going to be dangerous. Some orgasm, isn't it? No, it's all right. You just make sure that you're holding on to an earth wire you whilst you fuck him. Yes. Yeah. Or you wear a copper covered condom.
Rubber condom.
rubber condom. Oh shit, not a copper one.
Oh my god.
That was really conductive then.
Yeah, I don't understand how physics works. There is another one where Severus Snape is feeling really stressed out by his job, so Dumbledore sends him to Teletubby Land, where he then fucks some Teletubbies.
Tinky, Winky,
yeah.
La La, Dipsy, and Poe.
Oh, you have really aroused some members of the podcast community.
I have practiced my Rickman extensively.
Yeah, well, so a line from it is, "Teletubbies, lay here with me. I'll teach you how to be a man. Oh, but you, Poe, aren't ready yet. You are too young, baby. Stay here in the corner and play with your small hose."
Uh-oh.
It's like, and it's, I'm not going to read any more of it because...
Because we don't have an R rating on
this. But there are a number of bodily fluids involved, and it sort of sounds like... Marquis de Sade's 120 Days of Sodom was rewritten by the Early Learning Centre.
With Tubby Custard.
Yeah! There is another sex scene I found in which Professor X from the X-Men and Magneto have a threesome with Hannibal Lecter. Professor X reads Hannibal Lecter's mind. He understands that he is a cannibal and yet still puts his dick in his mouth.
Wow.
Tempting
face.
Exactly. Well, apparently the added danger that at any moment Lecter might chop it off and chow it down adds to the turn on.
And now isn't Thomas Harris writing his own sort of fan fiction of Hannibal Lecter? Because I think in the latest book, Hannibal Lecter and what's the woman?
Clarice.
Clarice, yeah, they hooked up in the latest book.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's grim. Like, he's doing that thing of making his characters react in a way that they wouldn't
react in
the normal
world.
He's
writing his own
fanfic. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's bad. Come on, Thomas Harris, raise your game. I know you listen.
Yeah. One other really, really weird sex scene is one...
I love that we've obliterated our internet browsing history.
Yeah. featuring a character called Death Note, who is sort of like a Japanese version of Dexter from Dexter's Laboratory, who manages... this is the original canon, but basically Death Note will write down a name in his notebook and that person will then die.
Oh, cool.
Well, and Death Note is sort of like the baddie in that. The detective from the Death Note series, Mello, awakens to find themselves in Tetris and is seduced and then penetrated...
By which shape?
By all of them.
Wow.
By all of the shapes.
Oh, including the 2x2.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that is
a capacious arsehole.
Well, no, obviously they have a problem with the sex scene where they try to get it in one way and at the last minute they panic and switch it the other way.
All while the music is playing.
Yeah.
Do, 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 do.
Other weird, weird mashups include a Golden Girls Lion King mashup. Where all three of the Golden Girls are Mufasa's lion cubs.
Wow.
And Dorothy, at the end of chapter 2, uses her telekinetic powers to make a buffalo explode.
People are so fucking weird.
People are so weird. There's another one in which it is revealed that James Bond's evil opponent Spectre are turning children into donkeys, and therefore James Bond does the obvious thing that you or me would do, is he enlists the help of Pinocchio, Jimmy Cricket, and Geppetto.
That's, I mean, Avengers assemble.
Yeah, yes! You can literally turn anything into fan fiction. Do we remember the game Pong?
The paddles and the balls.
Yeah, literally like the first ever computer game. Yes. Yeah. So there are, at the moment, 114 and counting fan fictions of Pong.
By different people?
Yeah. Including Pong The Last Chance, which is a narration of the ball trying to escape. Pong A Curse, which is that the game has been played by a man since he was 6 years old and he is trying to escape.
and my favourite one, which is set in a bar where the paddles and the ball are sharing a drink together and reminiscing over old games together.
Oh, that's kind of cute. So none of these are quite as sexy as the previous examples.
No, they're not sexy.
But we've got the paddles and the ball, and there's no sex.
Yeah, that is very Fifty Shades of Grey, to be honest.
Yes, it is.
It's that thing of, if you want to be really successful, you've got to be really niche.
Yes. Yeah,
so you know, guaranteed, if you write like a novel about Pong, you'll sell 114 copies and counting.
Well, the thing is, I remember when I was at school, a particularly pedantic and sadistic teacher, if you were misbehaving, he would make you write 500 words on the inside of a ping pong ball.
Indeed, classic.
Or the other sort of British boarding, British private school classic is 3 pages on the sex life of a brick. Who knew that he was preparing his pupils to write fan fiction 20 years later? I've got a couple more Harry Potter ones before I get onto my suggestion.
Are you going to talk about My Immortal?
No, I'm not.
Okay, yeah.
Do you want to kick off with My Immortal,
yes,
then?
Yes, because this is, if anyone has a vague passing knowledge of fan fiction, they may have heard of My Immortal. It's a real classic. It was published on fanfiction.net between 2006 and 2007. It's 44 chapters long. A couple of them were probably written by hackers. 22,700 words. It concerns a 17-year-old vampire and her relationship with characters from the Harry Potter universe, including and especially Draco Malfoy, who at the end of the story, she time travels to try and defeat Lord Voldemort. Her full name is Ebony Darkness, with an apostrophe between the dark and the ness, Dementia Raven Way. She states that she is not related to Gerard Way, the founder of My Chemical Romance, although he and his band feature frequently in the story.
Oh, that is a heavy black mark against that.
She spells the word ebony variously as Ebony, Enobi, Ebobi, Evoni, Ebori, Enobi, Enobpi, Egogi, Tara, and Taebori. Spelling is a real hit and miss in this story. Her main character, who's very much an idealised version of herself, it seems, attends a Good Charlotte concert in Hogsmeade with Draco. He takes her there in his flying Mercedes, license plate 666. They spend their time dissing Hilary Duff, and eventually they do it in the Forbidden Forest.
Whilst Aragog watches on.
I'm quoting here.
Oh no.
Draco climbed on top of me, and we started to make out keenly against a tree.
Keenly?
Yeah, have you not made out keenly before?
Not unless my teeth aren't shiny enough to make out keenly.
It's the classic primary school short story writing thing. Always use an adverb.
Yeah.
He took off my top and I took off his clothes. I even took off my bra. Then he put his thingy in my you-know-what and we did it for the first time. Yes?
I'm really lost for words with that.
It's great. Yeah, it was written by someone whose name, whose handle was XXX Bloody Wrists without a W, 666XXX. There's no one's entirely sure who wrote it. You mentioned an editor. This story apparently did have an editor who dropped out after about chapter 12, at which point there was a decline in the quality of the writing from already quite a low level.
Yeah, not a surprise. I imagine that editor was found floating in a river somewhere a week later.
So it's the classic Harry Potter fanfiction.
Okay, so I've got two Harry Potter ones to talk about. One is by a chap called Jack Fields. It's called 30 H's, and it's called 30 H's because the story starts with the letter H in capitals written 30 times. And like, it's like he's deliberately trying to mess with your reality.
That's not a good sign when the writer falls asleep on page one.
Hang on, though, guys, because in Tristram Shandy, there is a completely blank page, which is just a black splodge. It's like a black tombstone.
Well,
maybe he's just being really innovative in art house.
Well, I wonder if he was a little bit... He's trying to do, like, a J.K. Rowling Harold Pinter crossover, where the reality all starts to come to bits.
Yeah. Lots of hesitation.
Yeah, the two bits are... It's very difficult to invoke a good spell with a Pinter-esque pause in it. Yeah. The two quotes I've got for you from it, one is about Dobby doing something awful. Dobby relished his groin sores raw as he withdrew the flesh-choked blade from the assistant's ruined skull.
Ooh, I think we missed our chance to put in a listener beware notice there.
And listen, if you're this far in, as Dobby said to the skull. There's also a scene where Harry Potter eats Ron Weasley. But
how did he taste?
He tastes of strawberries because he's ginger.
Surely he tastes of ginger, Ben.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Ginger nuts.
But the one that really angered me. This sentence. Harry slammed his book shut. It wasn't really a book because the pages were made of lasers and the words were made of headless women making godless love to dragons made out of motorcycles, but it was still reading.
That is some excellent fan fiction. They just go, anything's possible, guys. Anything is possible. I could do whatever the hell I like.
But the worst example of ruining Harry Potter is something called a rationalist rewrite.
Oh, no. This is as bad as the Christian Potter.
In a way, because it's sort of smug atheists.
No.
So there's a gentleman called... Eliezer Yudkowsky. He is a quite well-respected researcher in AI, and he popularises the idea of friendly artificial intelligence, which I like to believe, but feels naive from where I'm sat.
He's one of them, don't listen to him.
Yeah.
He's the Borg.
And he wrote a book called Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality.
Oh. God.
And it's basically what would happen if magic didn't exist and instead the entire world was set upon rationalist principles. And it's Aunt Petunia doesn't marry the original Mr. Dursley. I've forgotten his first name.
Vernon.
Instead, she marries a physics major who goes to, it's either Cambridge or Berkeley, one of the two. I'll just briefly read you from Harry's first, this is his first interaction with magic actually at Hogwarts.
Okay, cool.
And it's the Transfiguration class with McGonagall, which is a wonderful scene from children's fiction. But in this book, Harry says, you can't do that. It's only a transfiguration, Potter, an animagus transformation. You turned into a cat, a small cat. You violated conservation of energy. That's not just an arbitrary rule. It's implied by the form of the quantum Hamiltonian. Rejecting it destroys unitary, and then you get FDL signalling. And cats are complicated. A human mind can't just visualise a whole cat's anatomy and all the cat's biochemistry. And what about the neurology? How can you go on thinking using a cat-sized brain? Magic, Potter. And just to give you an idea of how much...
Oh my God, he'd be such a pain. I can't ever feel like he's an atheist that's been accepted into a really Christian college.
Yeah.
You've definitely... The submissions process has gone wrong somewhere if we've let you in here.
He's the Neil deGrasse Tyson of fan fiction world.
Yeah.
His, some of the titles from this book includes Chapter 1, A Day of Very Low Probability. Chapter 6, The Planning Fallacy.
Plumbing?
Planning.
Fallacy.
The plumbing fallacy.
Yeah. Chapter 47, Personhood Theory. There are 5 chapters on the Stanford Prison Experiment. This is still in a Harry Potter book.
This is so good.
So he was going to be my suggestion, but I'm going to go for something called curtain fic.
Yes.
And curtain fic and IKEA fic. Have you heard of this, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they are a type of fan fiction where characters from real fiction, often romantic characters, just do mundane everyday tasks.
Yeah, because there's shipping, isn't there, which is where you sort of stick characters together you want to see hook up, but it tends to be have the heavy emphasis on the sexual side of things. And curtain fic is the what happens in between. It's like the James Bond movie where Bond is just on a lovely holiday.
Yeah.
Or the Doctor Who episode where they go to a planet and it's just really nice and people have food with them.
That's it. There's one I found of Tony Stark and Pepper Potts going grocery shopping. Tony Stark is not even dressed as Iron Man, which is hugely disappointing.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, really what I'd want is for him to go to an ironmongery and have all of the iron objects stick to him
just
magnetically.
Buying gates and...
Yeah. But there's another one, there's a Harry Potter one called House Proud, where Harry and Draco refurbish grim old place.
Draco's not allowed in there.
No! Yeah, it's breaking canon as well. Yeah. But the one I went for, and it's because it offended me personally so much, I was delighted to look through all of this fan fiction and find that it's mostly like big things. Star Wars, Star Trek, Harry Potter, Twilight. Mm. My greatest fantasy love is the Discworld. And I'm really, really pleased up until... this morning, that there was no Discworld fan fiction.
Really?
But there is one, and it's
curtain fiction, and it is Lord Vetinari, the benevolent despot of Ankh-Morpork, and Death, the Grim Reaper, hanging curtains in their version of the Oval Office. And they are two of my favourite characters in all of fiction. Like, if you're not a Discworld fan, listeners, then you're probably listening to the wrong podcast. but Vetinari is this incredibly witty and dark and intelligent Machiavellian character, and Death is the Grim Reaper, who speaks in capitals and is basically your granddad if he was also the Reaper of Souls. And this fan fiction, it's just turned into two wittering old grandparents hanging curtains.
Yeah.
And it takes, and it, what's so infuriating about it is that it's a writer who thinks that he knows better than one of the funniest writers of all time. Because the greatest of love to J.K. Rowling and to Gene Roddenberry and to George Lucas, it wasn't exactly laugh a minute with them, was it?
Hey, aren't you a little short to be a stormtrooper? Is a classic zinger from Leia. The constant use of "I have a bad feeling about this" switched to "I've got a good feeling about this" in Solo. Ooh,
yeah,
left field move.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lovely thing to end up in any Star Wars sex scenes. Yeah. I've got a good feeling about this. Chewie, hit the wah-wah pedal. So I'm going to pick this story called A Curtain Call from Discworld fan fiction, because I find it so irritatingly underwhelming.
I will give him Curtain Call as a very sort of Discworldy title, though.
Oh, don't give him any credit, Pat.
Nah, I've got to say
don't
it.
Do it.
It's good. It's good.
But it is a really, it sounds like this writer is knowledgeable about curtain fic to literally have them pick out curtains, though. So this is, we're talking, there might be several levels to this.
Yeah, he's done the reading, Ben.
Yeah.
Maybe it's meant to be ironic.
Oh, maybe I'm the one who's in the wrong.
Yeah, the slash fiction was inside you the whole time.
Yes, of course. Fiction is meant to hold up a mirror to life. I'm not sure what fan fiction holds up the back of a spoon to life.
The mirror from Snow White. If there's a fan fiction about someone getting head from that.
Did you say getting head from that?
Getting head. Isn't it a face in a mirror?
Did we just write fanfic?
I think we did, guys.
That was the inevitable conclusion of this podcast.
Someone has been listening to this podcast going, I don't think there's a fan fiction for me. And we have just suddenly, they've like, the scales have dropped from their eyes.
But here's the worst thing, because it's still a mirror. So if you're trying to get head from the face in the mirror, then you're going to crack the mirror with your cock and get 7 years bad luck.
Oh, no. Seven dwarves bad luck.
Our suggestions for this week are Barry's suggestion of the adventure of two collaborators, J.M. Barry and Arthur Conan Doyle, invade the universe of Holmes and Watson with tedious results.
Yeah.
Andrew's suggestion of the genesis of fan fiction in the modern world, E.L. James's 50 Shades of Grey, and my own suggestion of the curtain call, a wound to my loving heart of the Discworld. I'm not going to go for mine because it hurts me, but it's just me, and you two sound like you actually quite like it.
I want to meet this guy. I want to send him on to a meeting with Simon Schuster.
Yeah.
Penguin Random House.
What we really need to do is write a fan fiction where the penguin from Random House meets Simon and Schuster.
Yes, and they have a threesome in the Random House.
Yes.
You're welcome, Andrew.
You can stop listening, Penguin Random House.
The first draft will be on your desk by Christmas.
It's okay, they're just my publisher, they're used to it from me.
I don't think I'm going to go for 50 Shades of Grey, because I feel like if I picked the right day of the year and I was in the right mood and the right level of drunk on cheap red wine, I might slightly enjoy it. Whereas...
How dare you?
Whereas... The Adventure of Two Collaborators sounds so interminable. And I think it hits the sweet spot of two great men sullying themselves in the worst possible way.
It's so self-referential and wanky in that.
Yeah.
And not good. Why go to those lengths and then just waste it?
But also, killing off Holmes where his last line is, henceforth you will ride in buses, just is...
I mean, if
what
if,
a way to go, pushed off Reichenbach Falls, threatened with the 168 to Old Kent Road.
But I do feel that if Holmes was going to have one word in his last words, henceforth, is a very Holmesian word.
Yeah, that's true.
Before we go our separate ways, it's time for the world's worst news of the week, and we go to Lima in Peru, where in a local election, Hitler has run for mayor despite a threat from Mr. Lenin.
Yes.
This is in the highland town of Yungar, where a local politician called Hitler Alba is seeking a new term
Hitler
as mayor.
White. Hitler White.
Oh, Alba. Oh, God, yeah, Hitler White.
Oh, my God, that is very on-brand.
Yeah. I love his opening line when he spoke to a local broadcaster. He said, "But I'm the good Hitler."
That should be the running campaign. You go, well, at least I'm not the other one.
Yeah.
That's it. That's just your policy.
I'll level with you. I read this news story and I sort of feel like God is playing fan fiction with the narrative of the universe at the moment. Stressing that he rejects what the Nazi dictator Adolf Hitler stood for, which is a relief, he said he wants to oversee a fair and transparent government in Yungar, which is a farming town in the Andes. Now, I'll level with you. Where was Hitler's firm base of support? It was farming towns in Bavaria.
Yeah.
But it gets...
And didn't they all, like, the Nazis flee to South America?
Yeah, they did. That's where this looks super sus.
Yeah.
What I love is that a resident of a neighbouring district called Lenin Vladimir Rodriguez Valverde, so Lenin the Green, tried to block his conscription as candidate.
Lenin the Green against Hitler the White.
Yeah! Lord of the Rings fan fiction, there we are. It points out as an explanation in this story that in Latin America in particular, parents seem to choose exotic foreign-sounding names without really doing the research. For example, last year, in one of Peru's juvenile football teams, there was a player called Osama Bin Laden.
Oh, no, there wasn't.
There was.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine the mix-up in this situation room? The Black Hawk has landed, Mr. President. It's on the football pitch. It's like, what football pitch? We're targeting Osama bin Laden. There's been a horrendous mistake.
Andrew, where can our listeners find you, and what can they find you doing when they get there?
They can find me in Lexington, Kentucky. That's in the United States. I'm just sitting here right now. I'm working on my next book. But if you just Google my name, Andrew Schaefer, Schaffer, you got to spell it right. Actually, just Google "Hope Never Dies," Obama, yes. Biden. You'll find me. I'm not hard to find online. So, I would say just Google me.
And if you're a Patreoner or are fancy becoming a Patreoner, you'll be able to hear Ben and I reading a chapter of that in this month's secret, super awesome extra content on there. So hopefully that'll give you a taste for what Andrew's about.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Right, well, we're all off to rewrite the Torah, the Quran, and the New Testament and fill them full of more vampires, more wizards, and Joe Biden.
Yes.
Until next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward. Listening to us give fan fiction a damn good whipping. It got creepy, though. 50 Shades of Grey really likes it when we do that. Thank you, Andrew, for doing the show. It was just a case of one of those things where we discovered his book in a previous episode. I just dropped him a tweet and asked him, would he be interested in doing the show? And he did. So thank you to Andrew for joining us via Skype. And do check out Hope Never Dies, and indeed all of his other books. Is a very, very witty writer, and insightful and incisive, and a nice man as well. We had a lovely chat off mic after we finished. As ever, please do the usual for us. Follow us on Twitter. We're on @WorstFoot. I'm on @BasMaxDay, and Ben is on @BenVanderveld. We're on Facebook if you look for Worst Foot Forward. And if you're just someone who casually listens on SoundCloud and you don't yet subscribe to us, do look up Worst Foot Forward on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcast app you use. Will be on there. And hit the subscribe button. Give us a little few stars and a rating if you can do that as well. That really does help. But subscribing is the big way we discovered that we appear on the iTunes chart. Shout out to whoever it is that's listening to us in Qatar, by the way. Apparently we're peaking in the iTunes charts in Qatar this week. whoever that is, thank you. God bless you. And tell a friend about us. And now next week, our guest is going to be the excellent Bex Lindsay. Bex is a radio presenter on Kids Radio. And she joined us to talk about the world's worst toy. So join us for Furbies and G.I. Joes and Fisher-Price playsets galore. As we take on the world's worst toys. Not sex toys. Get your heads out of the gutter. We're not like that every week. I think the 50 Shades of Grey has rubbed off on you. Which, again, it is wont to do. Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.